Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Road trip. Road trip. This is a Tennis Podcast road trip for the first time ever in the history of the 592 episodes of the Tennis Podcast. Certainly since the first episode, we are in Solihull. Sunny Solihull, which has no sun at all. And Catherine Whittaker's here. Hello, Catherine.
Yeah, I'm just looking up on my Spotify. I feel like we should have Life is a Highway playing in the background.
Matt Roberts is here. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Hello.
We've been rained off, David.
Yes, we have. Matt and I are supposed to be playing tennis as we speak. That was in the schedule for our two-day road trip to Solihull, which is where we are right now. I say that it's the first time since the first episode 7.5 years ago, because that's where Catherine and I recorded it all those years ago. Catherine's glazing over at the thought. We haven't been here since. But what we do have in common is we're still here to talk about tennis.
Just if you're thinking, if anyone listening is thinking, oh, I'll go back and listen to that first episode, please don't.
Don't, yeah. But the match, although it has been rained off, it is just a postponement, Matt. It is not a cancellation, so don't think you've got away with it.
Apparently it's not drizzly in Solihull every day, although my sample size suggests otherwise.
Well, David wrote a little agenda for this two-day trip in, so that we could make the most of it, and top of the agenda was David to pick Matt up from the train station, trash talk to begin.
General trash talk.
Trash talk was on the agenda.
Trash talk in an agenda,
well,
folks.
And it's happened, folks. I can tell you, we've already gone past that part on the agenda, but we haven't had the match just yet. We are here, though, to talk about Beijing, because there's been loads of tennis there, and Tokyo, and to look ahead to Shanghai, and talk about whatever else has happened in the tennis world before Matt and I start duking it out on Henley and Arden's centre court tomorrow morning at precisely 9:30. With Catherine Whittaker as umpire. Are you looking forward to that, Catherine?
I mean, it sounds a lot like sitting in the rain watching low quality tennis to me. So
bring it on.
No.
Okay. So that's that. And more excitingly for the rest of you who are listening to this is the fact that you can still win a trip to the Davis Cup by Rakuten finals in Madrid between the 18th and the 24th of November, because our competition is still running in our newsletter, and it will be doing so until the 10th of October, which is Thursday night at 11:59 p.m. UK time. So get yourself on our newsletter if you want to enter that competition. We've already had hundreds of entries. Scan down.
What are people getting the question wrong?
There's a lot of people. There's at least a third of the people getting the question wrong, which I'm quite proud about, really. But anyway, that's fine. You know, maybe you're one of the right ones. But yes, get yourself on the newsletter. We're going to be sending out another one in the next day or so with details of the question you need to answer, how you get it in. And we have tickets to give away to people for round-robin matches of the team of your choice. Return economy trip as well, flight over to Madrid from wherever you are in the world, and hotel too. So I mean, that sounds amazing. Catherine's actually got, what's the song?
Life is a Highway.
Who would have thought it? Can we turn it off?
I don't want to have to pay Rascal Flatts any royalties, so I am going to pause that.
That's why we've got Catherine in the team. Can we talk about some tennis now? Anyway, incidentally, if you don't win, right, or if you just decide, you know what, I don't think I'm going to win because I'm not going to get that question right, go to the DavisCupFinals.com website. You can get a 15% discount if you put in the code TTP, Davis Cup Finals. Right then, Beijing, what a week. I mean, that was... I've covered a lot of Beijing tournaments for BT Sport over the years. I think this is maybe the best one I've seen in terms of the sheer number of colossal matchups between big-name players that all delivered.
And what an advert for mixed events with both men and women. You look at that order of play and you think, that's a great women's match, great men's match, great women's match. Such variety in the order of plays. And by comparison, Tokyo, which was also an ATP 500, didn't really feel like one. It felt like quite a lot of Tokyo was missable. If you kind of had to pick one or the other, it was Beijing every time, pretty much.
Yeah.
And a lot of the matchups that we wanted to happen in Beijing did end up happening.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, to some extent on the men's side as well, but on the women's side, it made me... I kept on thinking about the question that was put to us by... I think it was Victoria that edited our post-US Open Q&A edition. Great questions, Victoria. And one of them was, who are going to be the future rivalries on the WTA Tour and which ones are you most looking forward to? And I now would like to revise my answer to pretty much every match we saw in Beijing.
Because it started with, I think the first one that really caught my eye was Barty against Kvitova. And I always have the words, she's a great chick, ringing in my ears from Barty about Kvitova, who she clearly...
Who doesn't Barty think is a great chick, though? I feel like that's her standard...
Whoever she doesn't say to me.
God, please
say it about
me. Yeah,
because there's that quote
me.
Where she said it about Osaka. She's a great chick and she gives the ball a rip or something like that.
Yeah, but she clearly really respects Kvitova. There's a lot of camaraderie there as well. And they just... I mean, I think I saw the first two sets of that. And the first half an hour, Kvitova was unplayable. And then just bit by bit, Barty reeled her in. And it was just fascinating to watch that. And that happened a number of times over the week, none more so than the way Osaka, who won the title, carried herself. Because she just kept on reeling these players in. And I just loved the way they all seemed... fresh enough still, and at the, I mean, they were pretty much not. I don't know whether they were all at the peak of their ability, but they all felt like they were playing really top-notch tennis.
It didn't feel after the Lord Mayor show, which a lot of even the best tennis at this time of the season can feel. In all honesty, well, that's certainly how I sometimes feel about it. I can enjoy the matches, and I can still take enjoyment from this part of the season, but the fact that it doesn't build up to a slam can make it feel a little bit like a limp towards the finish line. As you say, everybody, maybe not everyone at the peak of their powers, but it didn't feel like lack of energy was a huge feature of any of the significant matches, and that's how you want it to be. You don't want to be thinking about... You don't want your mind to be turning towards debates about length of season while you're watching a good tennis match, which is how it can sometimes feel at this stage of the year, particularly on the men's side. You know that debate is going to come up, you know, pretty much daily. You know that players are going to be looking absolutely out on their feet. I'm talking about you, Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Who just about dredged a week of himself into the final.
Yeah, I mean, give that guy a holiday. Yeah. Get him a boat and send him on his way. But it didn't feel like that at all for me in the WTA event.
I don't think there's a match outside of the slams that I've looked forward to more all year than Osaka Andreescu. It felt like the whole year's been building for those two to face each other, especially on a hard court. And then it really delivered the goods. It was a fantastic match. And I just think there's a group of players now, the ones we've mentioned, Osaka, Andreescu, Barty, Kvitova, add in Halep, Pliskova. Between them, they've won most of the big titles this year, the slams, and the premier events, and they're all going to be at the WTA finals, and we've got more of this to look forward to over the next month, and that is tremendously exciting.
Chris Evert, 18-time Grand Slam champion, set her alarm for 5:30 a.m. to be up for Naomi Osaka against Bianca Andreescu. And I love that. Mm-hmm. The fact that, yeah. that, you know, somebody who's done that much in the sport was so pumped to be able to just witness this match and hope that it lived up to expectations. And as you say, I mean, it started off with Andreescu, I think, winning the first set, didn't it? And she was in charge. She was in total command of the match, in fact. And Osaka was struggling.
She was making Osaka look one-dimensional, wasn't she?
It was another set like the second set of the US Open final, where she raced 5-1 ahead, got reeled back into 5-all, and then won it 7-5. But the story of the set really was how, as you said, one-dimensional she made Osaka look in those first six games. You're thinking, this is Osaka who's won two Grand Slams in the last 13 months. Andreescu just looks like she's another level up. Mm. But I think what Osaka doesn't get enough credit for, probably, is because she's able to completely overpower players and thrash them handily. We kind of think of her as someone who can dominate opponents, but actually one of her biggest qualities, I think, is the way that she's able to grind and able to figure things out. I thought that was a feature that underpinned her Australian Open title run, where she figured out Shea, she figured out Pliskova, she figured out Kvitova. And I saw that again this week with Osaka in Beijing. She figured out Andreescu and she figured out Ash Barty in the final, both from a set down. And I think her on-court coaching with her father played a part in that. We'll talk about that. Those were tremendously positive experiences to watch. But also within herself, she adapted her game mid-match. And I think that's such an important skill to have, and something that we maybe don't give Osaka enough credit for, because she hasn't got the variety in her game necessarily, but she's able to use her movement to cut out errors and think, I don't need to go for the lines. I've got the power advantage in this. I just need to, you know, commit to what I'm doing, and I will figure it out. And I think I was so impressed with Osaka this week.
And cool, and yes, I think you're right. Her dad had a lot of input, and I loved their exchanges so much. I found it really uplifting this week and the previous week in Osaka, their exchanges, for so many different reasons, completely uplifting. But she seemed to always call him onto court at the right moments. That was another example of
If you missed those exchanges, the one that really resonated, the one that had us all talking, was when he came onto the court when she was, I think, a set and a break down against Andreescu, and her dad just said to her, just do what got you here. And he said, I'm proud of you. You can do it. And then he left. And it was just sort of no pressure, no masses of strategy. It was just backing. It was just backing her up. It was just lovely, really. And Anne Kyotharong and Laura Robson were commentating in the BT Sport commentary box, and they said they were in tears. You know, they were watching this, just so moved by that moment. And look, it's too easy to develop a narrative of cause and effect there, but she started playing better shortly after that, and she won the match. And you just feel, I feel anyway, having seen what she's gone through at other points of the year when she's not looked happy, and she's, you know, I've wondered whether this is really for her. Just seeing somebody come out and care about her and remind her of that, it's okay, everything's fine, you know, is just really nice, I think.
Yeah, and it's horses for courses, isn't it? And not just in terms of people, but in terms of circumstance as well. I mean, there are plenty of examples of parent-child coach-player relationships that make us all feel a bit uncomfortable for various different reasons, tennis-based reasons, you know, plenty of examples of parent coaches who seem like they're perhaps holding their children charged back, plenty of examples of exchanges that we've seen that indicate that, you know, the blurring of those lines must make for a very strange relationship at times. And you know, Naomi Osaka is somebody that has very openly put her happiness ahead of her tennis results, and also said that I feel like my tennis results will only really come when I'm happy. And you know, I've heard so much criticism of her, which really surprised me since that split with Sasha Bayern about questioning whether she could do it without him, and it's riled me. It's really riled me because, A, who cares? She never said she was making that decision to improve her tennis results. She said, I need to do this for my happiness. End of story. So, irrelevant, point one. And point two, just disrespectful, I think, of her ability and her knowledge of herself. So I'm so uplifted and delighted for her at what she's done in the last couple of weeks.
Mm.
And I find Osaka's year just really fascinating because of the sort of outside criticism that she got over the split with Bahrain and her results at Roland Garros and Wimbledon. It's been easy at times to think like she maybe isn't having such a good year. But actually, her 2019 season is objectively better than her 2018 season in terms of higher win percentage, more top 10 wins. She had her best clay swing ever, even though it wasn't brilliant. It was still a step forward. She's got a slam. She's got a Premier mandatory now and another title. She has had a really good season. And yet, she still feels like she's having to prove herself.
Mm.
And if Osaka feels like she's having to prove herself, what hope for the rest of us?
And I think maybe one of the reasons for that is because of the way she carries herself. She's not swinging about like Andreescu as if she owns the place thing. Clearly, with her personality, she's just such a... She just sort of belongs on that stage. You're never that sure with Osaka, really, whether this is for her. At least I sort of look at her and I think, is this the best place for her to be? And then you see moments in matches like that, and especially when she was coming back at Andreescu and when she gave her own fist bump. It's so much quieter by comparison, but you see the love for the game that she has, the love of competition and the desire to win. But, yeah, she doesn't give off that I'm a champion vibe all the time. That's just not her.
But in her own way, she loves the big stakes, doesn't she? We've seen her perform so well in big matches. And I thought, going back to the fact that it was this first meeting between Osaka and Andreescu, it just feels like something I had to watch, you know, because so often a first meeting can kind of set the tone for a rivalry. You know, you think back now to the way Nadal was able to get one over on Federer right at the start of their rivalry. And there was something symbolic to me about, I think it was the penultimate point of the Andreescu-Osaka match, when it's a really long rally and Andreescu did one of her looped forehands, which no one has been able to kind of deal with, figure out the best way to do it all year. And Osaka stepped in and hit a sort of jumping backhand winner up the line, and it was Osaka saying to Andreescu, my tennis is as good as your tennis, kind of thing. And I just think they both... It wasn't always the best match. They weren't always playing well at the same time until that final set, but they both went out there and played their own tennis and believed in it and trusted
it. That's the thing, isn't it? And then she hit an ace on match point.
Yeah.
She backed her own weapons and took the play away from her. I still feel like Andreescu has there's just a little bit of a question mark now about her, the way she just switches off in these matches, whether it's her or whether it's her opponents causing it. But she'll have these sudden shifts where she loses four or five games in a row and ends up having a third set that you're not expecting.
Well, in the BT commentary, it was Anki Ottavong and Laura Robson, and Anki Ottavong asked Laura Robson, what is Andreescu's weakness? And Laura Robson kind of laughed, thinking, God, that's a hospital pass of a question. What is the weakness? But then she thought about it, and she thought, well, maybe it is not finishing off matches in two sets. She's played so many three-setters, and she's had physical issues. What is happening? What is preventing her from winning these matches in two sets?
I think long-term that could be a problem. I think actually this year that's rubbed both ways, and in fact rubbed the opposite way, because she just has this... I think it's given her this belief that no matter what pickle she gets herself into, if she does suffer a run of five games, losing five games or whatever, she just still thinks, well, I'm going to do this. And we all think it as well, don't we? There's never a moment where you think she might win, because when she thinks she might lose, because we had never seen her lose. And she probably forgot what it was like to lose. So I think this year, given how it's all played out, that element that you're talking about has played in her favour, but you can't approach a whole career that way, thinking the bigger the pickle I get myself in, the better it'll do for my confidence.
I did find myself just staring at the TV when she lost match point, thinking, I've just witnessed Andreescu losing. And I was fascinated by the handshake, because I was thinking, I don't remember a handshake where Andreescu loses, really. Okay, we've had a couple of injury ones. You know,
it was drama-free.
Yeah, it was nice.
It was nice. She gave her a hug.
It was human, between the two of them. She's her own person, Andreescu. That's what I love about her. She is what she
is. They both are.
Yeah. And it was really uplifting to think that this could be the future, because that'll do for me just fine.
And it was interesting, we'll get on to the men, but it was interesting for me that that match happened on the same day as Murray team being the other sort of headline match that day. And it was interesting for me that the headline match from a men's point of view was a kind of Andy Murray returning narrative, whereas the women's event, we were completely looking towards the future with Osaka and Andreescu, whereas the men, we were kind of thinking, God, thank goodness Andy Murray's back. Okay, we then did have a interesting match between Zverev and Tsitsipas, and then team played Tsitsipas, and it was all good, it was all fine, but none of it felt as significant as Osaka and Andreescu playing for the first time.
None of it felt like anything we'd be talking about and looking back on in 15 years as the start of something.
Yeah. We touched on it briefly, but just seeing these significant figures of the year all coming good still at the end of the year. Barty, who's won the French Open, Osaka won the Australian Open, Andreescu still producing after the US Open, okay, Halep had a dip this particular week, Kvitova, who reached the final of the Australian Open. So often these results in recent years have been a moment in time, an Ostapenko winning the French, or a Sloane Stephens who produces like a dream at the US Open and then just kind of flatlines. It's great seeing them all come on strong at the same time in the same tournament, and Kiki Bertens pushing Barty all the way, and then you ended up with Barty against Osaka. It's not a match I was able to watch live, but you were telling me about bits of it as it was going on, and watching Osaka trying to decode the game, you know, clearly
despairing at the slice backhand of Ash Barty.
Barty had got herself a strategy. She can do different things, but she had, right, this will drive her up the wall. And sure enough, it did.
The David Law approach to tennis.
As you will discover tomorrow.
Yes, yeah, so the image in my mind of that final is Osaka at the end of the first set, which is a towel on her head and this sort of blank expression across her face, thinking, she's just beating me with a slice backhand.
This is not tennis as I know it.
And yet she figured it out.
Catherine's staring at me. incidentally, they won't let me play on the artificial grass court that I've made my name on. They're going to make
they?
Me... Well, me.
I'm happy to take ownership. I don't want to play on artificial grass.
No, he won't play me on that. He insists on
what did you describe as low court. Bouncing?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
which
skiddy.
It's not necessarily what I would think of fits as suiting your style.
Okay. Well, you wait.
6 foot seven. David Law likes a low bouncing court.
Oh yeah, I'm a dark horse.
Like Milos Raonic that way.
Good touch for a big man. So anyway, where do we get to? Yeah, the final. So how did she turn it around, Osaka?
Well, in a very similar way to what she did against Andreescu, she cut out going for really big shots and just realizing that she did have the power advantage. And actually, I was really impressed with Osaka's movement. The way she was hustling and defending in points and kind of turning the tables on Barty, making Barty think, oh, okay, this isn't working anymore. I need to do something else. And then once she got the second set, it really felt like the match was on Osaka's racket. But fair play to Barty, because since Wimbledon, since that loss to Risk, it's felt to me like her game hasn't been there. She's been slightly out of sync. She's been missing back slices and missing shots she would make. So to see her kind of fighting through that and still managing to play well and get to the final of a Premier Mandatory is a really impressive effort, especially with sort of close three-set wins against Kvitova and Bertens. You know, it'd be easy for Barty to kind of think, I don't need this. I want to try and secure number one, but I can do that in Shenzhen. Then I've got the Fed Cup final. But no, she was giving her absolute all in Beijing, and I think she's running slightly on fumes, but still managing to get through it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember thinking that when she lost to Wong in New York, I thought, is this kind of the curtains drawing on Barty season at that point? Because, you know, credit to Chong Won, but Barty shouldn't have been losing that match. And I mean, you know, if Ash Barty's knackered, then it's been a long season. But I mean, she had a good push at the end of last season, didn't she? Didn't she win?
She won Zhuhai,
which is the alternate end of year championships, which is poorly positioned in the calendar, as we've discussed.
It was. But it's better now. Yeah. They've moved it before now.
But yeah, she won that at the end of last season. Yeah. So maybe she got on a boat and had a sail of the seven seas and refreshed herself.
I genuinely could imagine Stefanos Tsitsipas and your dad on the boat together. I really could. When you were describing it earlier, I was thinking, your dad's been in Croatia, hasn't he, on his boat?
He has, yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, if you sent Stefanos out there.
It's not
with
his
him,
boat, to be clear.
All right, well.
We're not Saudi billionaires. We don't own any boats.
Borrowed
the
one.
Whittakers do not own boats.
No, but I could imagine it. You should mention it, Steph.
I mean, how well does he take instruction, Tsitsipas? Quite well.
Advice.
He takes it on the chin, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I think he's a good student. A
couple of weeks before.
He'd have to be
before the O2.
Clear on who the skipper is.
Right. You could get a boat to the O2. That's not long enough, is it? It's not a proper boat trip.
No.
It's not a rugged sail.
It's like a taxi ride on water, isn't it?
Will he be getting a boat to the O2? I think he's going to qualify, isn't
he? I think
he'll
get there.
Yeah. Will he have anything to give?
On the subject of qualifying, WTA finals, six players now have qualified. I mean, Barty is right in pole position for that world number one spot. She's 1,000 points ahead of everybody else. It still could change hands, but it's her, it's Osaka, it's Pliskova, it's Andreescu, it's Kvitova, it's Halep. Anybody else I'm missing?
So those are the six that are in,
yeah.
And then Svitolina is primed to get the next spot. We still don't know whether Serena's going to play, but we think probably not.
Extraordinary to think that Serena probably won't play, and the winner's check this year is twice what it was a year ago. It's the biggest. If you go in undefeated, it is the biggest prize check tennis has ever known, men or women. It's more than double what Tiger Woods got for winning the Masters earlier this year. It's $4.7 million.
Blooming heck, it'd be interesting if Serena played, though. Mm. How many of those matchups would she go into as favourite? I don't know the answer to that.
At Tennis Podcast, get your thoughts in. I'd love to know. Those six players we've just mentioned, Barty, Osaka, Andreescu, Pliskova, Halep and Kvitova. How many of those in the round robins, if you have
them? Because we've not seen her play that many top 10 players since her comeback. And obviously, when she's faced them in Grand Slam finals, she's lost. But it's obviously round robin format, which would favour her.
I just think, you know, medium term, playing something like WTA finals would help her for the Australian Open.
Without question.
I think she
question.
Should be going. I really think she should go. I think she'd win. I'd back her for half of them.
Yeah.
Still, I'd expect her to beat Pliskova. I'd expect her to beat Halep on that surface.
But I think she'd be nervous about it. I don't think she'd walk through those doors and be the instant favourite.
No,
I don't think so either.
Okay, well, that's to come. That's the end of the month, isn't it? Shenzhen, there's still a couple of tournaments to play before then, including Moscow. But the lion's share of the WTA Tour is done now, really. And there's Zhuhai, the 10 to 18 players, I think it is. Or 9 to 17, I can't remember exactly which number.
It's you've got the issue of the WTA Finals needs an alternate. So, how do they do that? Does the player have to make a call between being an alternate in Shenzhen and being a...
Maybe.
Don't know. Not sure on the rules. We'll check for next week. Meanwhile, we had... Go on.
Well, I remember that year in Singapore when Venus Williams went as an alternate. And she could have gone to Zhuhai, I think. I'm thinking aloud here, folks. It's... It's Radio Gold.
Yeah, here in the Beefeater in Solihull.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So, the men's events, which was won ultimately by Dominic Thiem. I mean, he did really well, didn't he? Because he came back from seemingly lost positions a couple of times. In the semi-finals against Karen Khachanov, he was 6-2, 5-3 down, and he won. In the final against Tsitsipas, I knew he was a set down. You told me he was a breakdown as well, Matt.
Yeah, he was. And he turned into this absolute
Hulk monster. It's like he suddenly remembers that he can hit the ball really hard.
Yeah, and get it
in. Why haven't I been doing that?
It's extraordinary. Actually, I must say, when he plays like that, I'm struggling to think of a player who I prefer watching to Dominic Thiem in that mode.
It's something to behold, isn't
it? It's unbelievable. He's just ripping the ball off both wings, landing in. And
it's,
you know, sort just of, taking apart Tsitsipas.
I know the comparisons with Wawrinka are a bit lazy because of the single-handed backhand, etc. But it feels like Wawrinka 2016 US Open final type tennis, just making everything else look puny.
And I think his court craft is slightly underrated. He was better at the net than I remember him being. I think that is an upgrade he's made to his game.
And was
year.
Foraying there, quite a lot.
It was a tactic. To
and
come
was
forward.
I'm still not hugely convinced about his slice backhand.
No.
But he's trying to integrate it more. I think he realizes it's a work in progress. He's trying to add it. He's trying to add a bit of blocking, isn't he? Again, Wawrinka comparisons. Wawrinka's got a decent block.
I think Tsitsipas could do with a better block return and a better slice backhand. I think Thiem actually slightly exposed Tsitsipas in that area. And when you hit the ball as hard as Thiem, you're going to get short balls in return, so it makes sense to come forward. And he's played a little bit of doubles this year, Thiem. Nothing.
He played with Diego Schwartzman, didn't he? They reached the final in Madrid.
Yes.
Is that right?
I don't know. He definitely played with Schwartzman.
It's a weird thing to make up if it's not right.
we'll look that up too, folks.
I'm pretty sure that happened.
Okay. I think there was that notable stat you put out about his hard court record, given that we talk about his clay court prowess so much.
His
clay court grinder, Dominic Thiem, that was his...
Labour Cup
intro.
Yes, oh my goodness.
It was his Labour Cup.
It was his Labour Cup intro twice, and then they changed it to Clay Court Virtuoso Dominic Thiem. But yeah, I mean,
just call him a French Open finalist. It's not.
Don't get me started on those intros. But like, the bulk of his points are going to come on clay. The bulk of his best results are going to come on clay. But he's having enough very good results on hard court to complement that. US Open quarterfinal last year. He won St. Petersburg last year. Paris semi-final. Indian Wells champion. Now a Beijing champion. He's putting together really good results on hard courts. And I actually think he was a bit unlucky at the US Open this year. He had that virus, didn't he? And he lost first round. I think he could have made a run there. But, you know, keeping healthy and keeping fit is part of it as well. And
this stuff still happens too often to him, doesn't
it?
I mean, you know, great that he's won Beijing, but why are you peaking at Beijing?
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Why are you peaking on clay in Kitchbull?
Yeah.
It's not
ideal.
The week
after Wimbledon.
And it must be said, as much as I've picked out the good results there are plenty of bad results on hard courts that you can pick out as well.
He's lost a couple of people this year that I've never heard of. Like, he's too susceptible to lose losing to people you've never heard of.
Yeah. So what about Alexander Zverev then?
Oh.
Tell us about his week, Matt.
Well, I predicted him to win the tournament.
Yes, I remember that.
Which I still think was a really good prediction, because I laughed you out of town at the time.
That's not what you said at the time.
I laughed you out of town at the time. I didn't. There's no way I saw him even making semi-finals, really. So I still think you predicted...
I never get
generous like this to David. I recognise that. But you predicted that he would exceed expectations.
Yeah, I predicted an upturn.
Which you deserve some credit for.
I was irritated that you'd come up with that and I hadn't thought of it until you'd said it. Because I saw the first two rounds that he played against Tiafoe and then Ogier Aliassime, who admittedly is going through a sticky patch at the moment. I think he's knackered. He needs a holiday. He needs to go on the boat with your dad and Stefanos.
But also... practice serving a lot.
Yeah, that
not too long a holiday.
Quite helpful too. But, you know, he absolutely wiped the floor with them in the way that he was doing last year and the year before in the non-slams, where when his serve gets going, he just rolls it over. He's impossible to sort of penetrate from the back of the court, and he just knocks you off the court in that kind of metronomic way of his. It's not Dominic Thiem. He'll never be like Dominic Thiem redlining it. That is not his game. But he becomes very, very difficult to beat when he's in metronomic mode. But he malfunctioned.
And he beat Sam Querrey in the quarters. And that, I think that was the first match this year in which Zverev didn't serve a double fault. Which is a
first match of this year.
Yeah, it's a mind-blowing stat.
How much pressure... I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but how much return pressure does Sam Querrey put on in it? A server.
But the point being that he will have played
is that
weak
delicately
returners.
Delicately enough phrase.
He will have faced weak returners this year and hit double faults.
True. That's true. He was plucking double faults out if he could double fault against David Law.
I hope so.
But it was one of those where I was waiting for the Osaka Andreescu match and I saw Zverev Querrey was on and I thought, How much do I trust Zverev to get this done in two so I can watch Osaka Andreescu? And he did. He was an efficient straight sets win. And I thought, okay, a corner has been turned with three straight sets wins. And then the match against Tsitsipas happened, which I must say I didn't see a great deal of, but I know you did.
Well, that was my first Zverev match I watched of the week. I didn't watch any of these previous barnstorming, efficient performances. I'd read analysis of them on our WhatsApp group and thought, right, I'm going to tune in to watch, you know, 2018 ATP Finals Zverev take on Tsitsipas. This is feed it into my veins. And of course spent the first half hour shouting at my laptop screen because I couldn't tell which player was which. I mean, sidebar, that was ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. It looked like they were playing a practical joke on the audience.
Both players in orange headbands.
They were wearing identical kit, styled in identical ways, with the same hair. You just can't do that. You can't have matching haircuts.
How
do
you get on at Wimbledon when they're all wearing the same?
Well, don't get me started on the all-white policy at Wimbledon, because I got beef with that as well.
Beef in the beef eater.
Yeah, it was stupid. It was so self-defeating and so easily put right. I don't understand how that ever happens. But anyway, so I tune in. I've heard all this great stuff about Zverev's back, and I'm thinking, Matt, how does Matt know this stuff? Because I laughed him out of town when he made that prediction. I tune in, and he's 3-1 up against Stefanos Tsitsipas. So I'm like, oh, right, yeah, great. This is Zverev is back. And then sort of 6 points later, he's lost his break, and he is absolutely drilling his racket into the court. The sort of drilling your racket into the court that you would do if you lost a 2 sets to love lead in a Grand Slam final. That kind of drilling the racket. The turnaround in his mental state and mental stability was mind-boggling, really, and not commensurate with the turnaround in the score. Yes, it was a frustrating situation. He'd lost a lead. He'd let Tsitsipas, who's clearly running on fumes, back into the match. But how he can let it go haywire, as palpably haywire as that, so quickly, is alarming. It's really alarming.
He's got no confidence to draw upon.
No.
You know, if you see...
So fragile.
You know, we talk about Nadal and Djokovic and Federer, their mental strength. If something goes a bit wrong, they just think, well, of course it goes wrong.
Imagine what they were saying into their live scores tablets.
Yeah. We know what they were saying, because we've heard them say it. Was he hearing that echoing in his ears? Didn't look like it was, but maybe he was. And why was it not having any impact? I mean, I oscillate between feeling sorry for him and feeling zero sympathy at all, because thinking sort of, but does that sympathy sort of reinforce his sense of entitlement? Why should we feel sorry for him? He's still a top 10 player. He's still doing all right. Feeling sorry for him implies that he necessarily should be doing so much better, and maybe he shouldn't. And maybe that's a big part of the problem, that he feels entitled to be doing better.
Some people think we're too hard on Alexander Zverev. Yesterday or the day before, one of our media colleagues tweeted the fact that he has not beaten a top 10 player all year. And first of all, Nick Kyrgios jumped to Zverev's defence and said, well, you won't beat a top 10 player in your life. Also a fact, not relevant, but that's what Nick Kyrgios had to say.
Another sidebar, that trend of athletes having a pop at journalists for not having been athletes and therefore not being entitled to make any comment on sport or athletics worries me.
I saw Renée Stubbs did something less dramatic, but she also made the point, leave him alone. They're just facts, and we can't ignore them.
He clearly expects more from himself. We're following his lead an extent here on how we frame him.
Is that what it is? Is it a question of Alexander Zverev carries himself as if he's won 5 slams and slightly sneers at you? You know, there is that. He does have that in him that makes people perhaps judge him more severely when he doesn't meet these targets.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably a factor.
I think the degree to which he's falling short at the slams is so severe, to have not gone beyond a quarter final, given the number of years now that he's been touted as being something that is a player that is going to win these things, and the manner of those defeats against who he has been beaten by. I think that, I think people have lost faith or lost belief that he will necessarily turn it around and come good on it.
Do Zverev doubters get more criticism because the doubting comes with a slightly less sympathetic tone? If you make the comparison to, say, Dimitrov, who we're pretty harsh on. He's been a huge disappointment over the years. Obviously, he's a bit further down the line than Zverev, but we do it with a warm sort of, we wish him well. We wish that there were. We wish that he hadn't disappointed. Now, I don't wish any ill of Zverev at all. But there, it doesn't come with the same warmth that we all embrace Dimitrov with. I think that's fair to say. I mean, obviously, the podcast has... we've embarrassed ourselves so many times on behalf of Grigor Dimitrov that we have a special allegiance towards him. But perhaps we're all open to a bit of criticism on that front. But then, but then it's difficult to feel warm towards him when he's slinging arrows towards us all the time, isn't he? He can be pretty disrespectful in press conferences towards the media and some of our questions. So it's a two-way street.
I was just going to say that it's still better to be in Zverev's position. You know, the reason why we talk about Zverev and are disappointed with Zverev is because he has shown us something. He has shown us what he is capable of to a certain extent. He has won Master Series, he has won the ATP Finals. The logical next step from that is to have higher expectations of him at slams and things. You know, it's better that we're talking about Zverev as a contender for big titles than we're not talking about him at all. Like, it stems from a positive place, our comments, because he's been good in the past.
Yeah, wait and see how annoyed he is when we're just not talking about
him. Exactly.
When he's not in the conversation. That's what'll grate the most, I suspect. If it ever reaches that stage, it might not. But once he drops out of the conversation, I suspect that will be...
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see whether the scar tissue that must have built mentally is going to... Well, if he's going to be able to break that down over the next couple of years, really, because, you know, he's got a lot of work to do. And you said to me earlier in the week, Matt, that unless he does it at the slams, all of this other stuff will be irrelevant.
Yeah.
I just felt that this week was going to be a stepping stone on the road, because he needs to rebuild the basics before he can go and do it at the slams, I would have thought. I don't see him suddenly having a week out of nowhere at a slam and reaching the semis or reaching the final or going further than he's ever before.
He's not that kind of player,
he needs to do it incrementally. And so, you know, he needs these weeks. He needs Shanghai, which let's get on to Shanghai in a moment. But first of all, Novak Djokovic winning Tokyo in routine fashion. It's why we say it wasn't the best watch. And it's not Novak Djokovic's fault. He was just so far head and shoulders above the rest of the field, which was, you know, it wasn't the strongest field in the world. But the big news is that he did it without a dodgy shoulder, by the looks of things. He looked imperious. He wasn't pushed. He wasn't moved at all. He just looked... He made it look easy.
I think it was quite easy.
Yeah. As you said, the news was that his shoulder was not a problem. Other than that, we didn't really learn anything about Novak Djokovic.
We learned that John Millman loves Novak Djokovic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Really heartwarming speech from him after the final, sort of not having a pop at people, because I don't think John Millman is capable of that. but
he had something to say there, didn't he?
He had something to say, yeah. He was defending the character of Djokovic in the face of... He didn't reference any criticisms, or it was entirely positive, but it was sort of implicitly couched in... The implicit subtext for me was, this guy gets a lot of criticism. I'd like to speak up for him and say he's a great guy, and that should be acknowledged. And in so doing, prove to us also that he himself is a great guy. John Millman is a great guy.
He's the best guy. Breaking news.
Yep, we know that to be true.
I suppose it was relevant for Djokovic, in a sense that he hasn't necessarily brought his best tennis this season outside of the slams. You know, I think he's won the Australian Open, Wimbledon and Madrid, I think, and now Tokyo. So it's relevant in that sense that this was a week where, he wasn't up against seriously difficult opposition for him, but he still played his absolute best tennis and just squashed any kind of challenge that Puy or Goffin might have posed.
Against Djokovic shouldn't be allowed to happen.
Not a matchup I ever want
to see. All of those players, if you think of them, Puy, and Goffin and Milman. They're all kind of Djokovic light, aren't they?
They
all play, hit a good ball, they're really good players. He's a great player.
Yeah,
he showed, I'm a great player, you're good players, these are the results.
Yeah.
It was actually a very stark way of realising just how unbelievable Djokovic is, because that type of tennis he does play, sometimes it can not be very effective, but he makes it so effective just by how good he is and how sort of the relentlessness of the depth on his shots. I mean, it's all stuff we've said before, but it is reinforced when he plays people who have the same game style as him.
How heavily is he going to beat Denis Shapovalov in his opening match in Shanghai?
I would back Shapovalov more than any of those other three that we've just mentioned.
Oh, me too, but
is I think that Shapovalov could come out with an awesome day.
He could. I don't know whether he'll pull an upset for the whole match.
No.
That's the thing, isn't it? That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying he won't perform well and pull off some great shots and maybe have a little patch where he could possibly even win a set.
So I think it
could
be quite
close.
Why
am I making predictions for a match that'll already be over by the time anyone's listening to this? There is nothing to be gained.
But so Djokovic, we think, has never lost in the Beijing-Tokyo week of the calendar.
34-0. We were going through his Beijing results, which he obviously didn't play last week, but he's won it, what, five or six times?
Yeah, he's 29-0 in Beijing and now 5-0 in Tokyo.
Yeah, and we were looking at the runs. He's just destroying fields 2-1, 2-1, 1-1.
Barely drops games.
It's incredible what he does to people.
He's won Shanghai a handful of times as well. Yeah. He seems to relish this part of the season.
You must say, though, if everybody could stay fit, we could be in for one heck of an ATP Finals, because the world number one ranking should be up for grabs. If Nadal not playing in Shanghai this week, Djokovic coming in great form, those two are there in London. Federer's qualified. Dominic Thiem is now qualified.
Medvedev
for the first time. It's a really mouth-watering field building, isn't it?
Yeah, you'd expect it to pass to qualify
from here.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, that if is a really, really big if, and always is for the ATP Finals. But yeah, on paper it could be quite. You want the number one ranking to be on the line. You cast your mind back to 2016, Murray Djokovic. Yeah. They ended up in the final. Murray wins it, clinches the number one ranking. That's what you want.
Plus, you want freshness.
Yeah.
You want. We were talking about Barty, Kvitova, Osaka, Andreescu managing to find some form and fitness at the right time, all coming together in the autumn the way they are. Want the same for the ATP Finals. And I kind of feel like Medvedev coming in new, Tsitsipas hopefully as a new player. I think it could be really special.
Yeah, because there's been some real duds in the last few years at that tournament. There's often a saving grace, a good match, but most of the matches are
a couple of weird matches
sort
last
of
year,
barely tennis at times.
Very odd Nishikori matches.
Yeah. Yeah, Nishikori Federer, Nishikori team last
Chilich,
year.
Chilich has always struggled hasn't he?
Yeah. It's felt a bit tired.
Feels like there's always somebody that withdraws from the tournament after playing one group stage match. So you get a sort of couple of glimpses of Pablo Carreño Busta, knowing that it'll amount to nothing meaningful. You want it to be a coherent, energised week.
I'm feeling optimistic.
No.
Look at you.
See the grin he's doing. Can't contain himself.
Incidentally, on the subject of my grin, I'm also drawn to this line out of a press conference from Tsitsipas after the Zverev win. They said to him, three in a row against Zverev now. Why are you having so much success against him? He goes, I mean, actually, I feel like I don't really have to do many things in order to either break him or go the extra mile in my game. I just have to play simple and just be productive. It's not the case with many other players.
So if you think we're being harsh on Alexander Zverev...
you know that he doesn't mean him any ill when he says it that way.
No, not at all.
He's slightly... he's just blunt, isn't he, and slightly clumsy in the way he says it.
I was going to ask what the level of needle was like in that match, because as much as I enjoyed seeing Zverev and Tsitsipas interact at the Laver Cup and kind of get on a little bit, equally, I'm ready for
it. It was quite one-sided getting on, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was Tsitsipas wanting to get on with Zverev. But as I want a rivalry...
Well, that's not going to bloody help,
no,
is it?
No, it's not. I want a rivalry where they openly hate each other.
I think Zverev openly hates Tsitsipas.
He's not very shy about saying how he feels, is he?
No.
It's brilliant.
Well, neither... I mean, there's obviously the needle with the management situation. Zverev has documented his trials and tribulations over his manager at length. Well, that manager was the manager of both him and Tsitsipas, and that was obviously an untenable situation, and Tsitsipas is still with that agent, and Zverev is now not with that agent, although still going through legal wranglings. So I don't think that helps. I don't think it helps that they are sort of, they're like Superman and Clark Kent, aren't they? They're just, except not, because Superman and Clark Kent wore completely different clothes.
Which one's which? Well done, which one's which in this scenario?
What happened to Tsitsipas liking balance that is new?
I don't know.
He's not supposed to be with Adidas anymore, is he?
Maybe he
tweeted it was the most that adorably uncryptic. He thought, I'll drip feed cryptic clues about my new clothing deal. And just out of nowhere tweeted, I like balance that is new. And yet somehow here he is still doing an Alexander Zverev impersonation routine. But
I still want to know which one of these two is Clark Kent and Superman in the scenario. Depends on the day.
Well,
you're going to need a week to think about that, aren't you, Catherine?
Maybe they're like good Superman and bad Superman. Whoa. From Superman...
Four. Yeah,
it's
awesome.
Not the best one, that is. It was on the telly the other day. Those special effects have not stood the test of time.
Not aged well. Incidentally, beneath the tweet about Stefanos's comments about Zverev, somebody wrote the word "burn." Right. So I looked this up.
Oh no! This is the Urban Dictionary segment, isn't it?
Looked it up, and it said "burn" means to disrespect someone, to make fun of someone.
I think that was pretty self-explanatory.
Used by a third party after a first party makes fun of a second party. So there you are.
I mean,
burn. That's what they say, and they also say. Well, apparently, they also say he was being salty.
Yes.
And salty is when you are upset over something little. That's what Urban Dictionary tells me.
Well, that's what Kyrgios called...
Nadal.
Yeah.
Super salty.
So I'm learning all sorts.
Well, Zverev was asked about Medvedev at the US Open, wasn't he? He was asked about Medvedev's heroics at the at the US Open. And he ended up bringing the conversation back to bitching about Tsitsipas, didn't he?
He was like, I think Medvedev's fine, but Tsitsipas?
Tsitsipas and his shoe stuff.
Oh, the laces.
Still my highlight of the year. Maybe tied with Medvedev, Leander Paes changing Tsitsipas's shoes.
It's all happening. Okay, by the way, we saw Andy Murray today. We saw Andy Murray all last week, doing pretty well. He lost to Dominic Thiem. That's the last two title winners that he's lost to. Today he beat Juan Ignacio Londero. We watched it whilst having our lunch.
Luckily on mute.
Yeah.
Because Londero is loud.
He is loud.
Yeah.
All right.
My first experience of Juan Ignacio Londero was walking past the Bullring court at the French Open, outside the court, and being able to hear Londero thinking, who is making that racket in there? And turned out it was him.
Maybe that's why Murray was looking so irritated. He lost the first set 6-2, ended up winning 3.
Summing up everyone's Monday feels his face today,
Andy
Murray.
On not Fabio ours, but... Fognini in the next round as Andy Murray.
And this is going as Murray planned is the wrong word, but would have wanted, you know, building incrementally week by week. He's winning he's playing one match, two matches, three matches. He's gradually playing more and more and looking
and
better and better.
David said earlier, today, it got better as the match went on today.
Yeah,
and he identified that himself. That was the first thing he said he was pleased with in his interview immediately off the court, because he's looked pretty spent after a few of those victories. And I know the conditions have been challenging. I mean, Zhuhai in particular looked just like some sort of hot yoga type situation on the centre court there. I mean, we had the commentary off, so didn't hear reports of how hot it was. But if the fabric of Andy Murray's shirt at the end of that match was anything to go by, it was a sweaty evening.
Clammy.
He
was saying
afterwards. Sweat fabrics are available,
Andy. He was saying how fast the conditions were in Shanghai, so that'll be something to watch out for this week, won't it?
But there's something really uplifting I'm finding about watching this period of Murray's career. I think it was a lady called Maggie Ellis tweeted us saying that there's something so special about enjoying something which you thought you wouldn't have the opportunity to enjoy ever again. And, you know, without wishing to get all kind of soppy about it, it is very much like that. I had pretty much come to terms with the fact that Andy Murray, singles tennis player, was done as a thing, and now it's back. It's almost like going to a good school reunion or something. Like you're seeing all your old friends again, and you're almost transported back to that time, and yet he's doing it all over again, and we're getting to watch it again. And I just think there's something really powerful about it, I think, at the moment, with just knowing that Andy Murray's playing tennis and we're able to watch it again.
Mm. Yeah, she summed it up really well, as have you. Yeah, he could do with a shave, though.
Nothing wrong with going a week with a beard. As long as you can tell that it's a beard. Mine didn't work out last week. But, you know, I gave it a go. As I will give it a go tomorrow against Matt, what am I going to be facing? Matt, what sort of style do you bring to a tennis court?
Nothing special.
Selling it.
That scheduled trash talk has gone well.
You should have heard what you were saying earlier. Oh, dear.
No, my backhand's my best shot.
Is it? Oh, that's useful to know.
Yeah.
Great. I'm not telling you what mine is. So, Roger Federer has been tweeting up a storm.
Not his serve.
Everybody? Catherine's got video evidence that will never surface of my serve. Roger Federer has been...
I really wanted that to surface.
Tweeting a lot. And getting very excited ahead of Shanghai, so that's
he is tweeting a lot, isn't he?
Like, and it a lot, a lot.
I don't love his Twitter activity at the moment.
Harsh. I think he's cute.
I quite like it. I think he's quite good at Twitter.
He's dad tweeting.
It is. It's really naff.
It's like one of his kids have come up and said, "Dad, this is how you do it." And he's like, "Oh,
yeah, okay." Yeah,
but
I'm just going to keep doing it.
I think he embraces it. He was asking people for like a new profile picture and sending, you know, getting suggestions from people, and I think he owns it.
Yeah, it is like when I got a Facebook friend request from my grandpa. It was a weird day.
Did you accept it?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Me and Sydney Whittaker are friends in all senses of the word.
Fantastic.
And then he got hacked, and it was really bad.
Okay, right, and on that note, I think we're done for another day. Anything else I'm missing, folks? Make sure you're on the newsletter, guys, if you want to enter our Davis Cup finals in Madrid, Davis Cup by Rakuten, to get these tickets, to get the trip to Madrid, to have your accommodation 18th to the 24th of November. You've only got a few days to go, so enter the competition. Scroll down on your app right now. Get yourself on the newsletter.
Travel from anywhere in the world. Yeah. So the further away from Madrid you are, the better value you can get from the prize.
Indeed. So, do that and tell your friends about the Tennis Podcast. Do that. Leave us a review on iTunes. All of these things. And we will keep producing these shows for you. Hope you're enjoying them. Thanks for joining us. We are executive produced by TennisBalls.com with our mascot, Rio with a Y, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. And we will be back next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.